Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Lock It Talk on the Bachelor News Radio Network. We're going to hear about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you guys can always reach out to me on any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockReport.com, and on Locker Talk Podcast. On Instagram, LockReport, 100 all small caps, or you guys can simply shoot me an email there at Barry Barnes@locker-report.com. Well, I hope everyone is safe where they are, whether they're at home or if you're essential workers, that you're out, that you're safe, and that you're guarding yourselves appropriately while we're still going through this national crisis with the pandemic. And I just hope that everyone understand my voice is okay, and that their families are okay. And again, you know, to anyone who may have lost a close relative or friend due to the COVID-19, you know, definitely our prayers go out to you and your families, and hope that everyone are able to sustain through this trying time. With that being said, we know that everything is in God's hands, and so we're just going to continue to move forward and hope that the appropriate people that's in charge can continue to try to help get the country back on track. But we know that safety is first, so definitely 100% supporter of that. Now, in terms of sports, on the lighter side, I know that sports is not being played, but that's starting to rev up a little bit now, you know, so that's pretty good. You know, everything falls on par with the NFL, with their draft going virtual, something that they normally do anyway, pretty much conduct, you know, their draft by phone and everything. Only thing is, it was just great to see. You know, only thing that we miss is just seeing that emotion with the kids walking across the stage, being able to shake Commissioner Roger Goodell's hand, which is always a good treat to see. But you still was able to see the family side, the emotional side, while they was at home or wherever they were at. They had more family members and friends that was able to attend, more so than if they would have been in Las Vegas. So we still saw that. But as we know, that the NFL draft still went on. It was a very successful draft in terms of the platform that I cover in regards to the NFL Regional Combine. You know, that was a success as well. Now, although the workouts were canceled this year, it still was a good portion of the players that were coming, that were invited to the regional, still was able to get an opportunity to get drafted or receive their phone call after the draft. We had 9 players from the platform that were drafted, and we had 36 players that signed as undrafted free agents, which was great. To be able to see those guys that were pretty much unknown gems have an opportunity, you know, to be able to play in the NFL, because that's what it's all about. Working hand-in-hand with NFL football operations is definitely a privilege on my part. And then to be a part of that, to be able to report and evaluate these players the best of my ability, and then to see how these guys are able to still get into the league is a great and fantastic thing. But last 2 weeks, we talked about that, but this week, we're going to move into a different portion, which was the HBCU Combine. This year was going to be the very first one that was going to be conducted. Hands on deck, everyone was excited. I was definitely excited, you know, to see, you know, an opportunity for HBCU community to finally be represented and get their due. I know that this was something that was really, really on the heart of NFL Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Troy Vincent, you know, how he was pretty much the catalyst in putting this whole thing together, something that he'd been working on for the past, you know, couple of years. So this was not one of those things you just thought of in 1 year and boom, let's have a combine. I know there's a lot of work, a lot of effort to put into this and try to get, you know, all the parties necessary involved to want to be able to showcase this. But due to the pandemic, and rightfully so, we were able to had to cancel the workouts. Now, unlike the players that were coming to the NFL Regional Invitational, how a good portion of those guys were able to still have an opportunity to make an NFL roster. On the flip side, with the HBCU platform, it really did not scratch the surface for us players from there getting the opportunity to be able to work out for a team. I mean, after all, for the most part, it's still a workout. There were only one player. There was only one player from the regional, from the HBCU combine platform that would have gone to the workout that actually got drafted, and that was Tennessee State's tackle, Latrevious Simmons. Now, Simmons, from my estimation, from my evaluation and breaking down, and if you guys follow lockerdashreport.com and watch how, you know, I had evaluated these players, and I have an icon at the top that says HBCU ready. Everything predicated to the HBCU brand that's coming through lockerdashreport.com, that's where you can go and see the content based off for the HBCU players only. And when I did my breakdown of where these defensive players will fit, not all of them were what you considered, what I considered draft worthy, and not all of them were considered team worthy. And that was the breakdown that I had. But out of all the players from the ACC, both defense and offense, Simmons was the one that I graded the highest out of all those players. I actually had him going as early as the fourth round because I really believe in his skill set. This young man is filthy. He's definitely an NFL player. You know, the Chicago Bears wound up drafting him in the seventh round. Then they got a steal in this young man, a 227 overall, where he is explosive off the ball, very athletic, fast, elite speed for the position, great lateral movement, powerful, great feet, versatile. And despite not playing the center position, he played on every position on the offensive line. Strong hands. And the part that stands out the most is that one-on-one, he's practically unbeatable. If he go one-on-one against, whether it's a good elite speed rusher or defensive tackle, nose tackle, if you go one-on-one with this young man, he is going to win. And that's one thing that I've never seen from watching his tapes, you know, reviewing him. When he lock in on you, you're not getting past him. And that was the reason why I had him, you know, at least going as high as the fourth round. But he was the only one that was drafted, so that was great. Alex Taylor from South Carolina State, the offensive lineman, you know, he was the only HBCU player that was invited to the National Scouting Combine. Now, he did not get drafted, but he did sign with the Cleveland Browns, so he still has earned a way into the NFL. And one of the biggest things that was on the hearts of those who run NFL football operation is that how the HBCU brand, how their portrayal, or I would say their representation in the NFL, was piss poor, basically. When you look at, there's over 1,600 players total that's active in the NFL. Just to not even scratch the surface, I mean, not even a pinch of the players in the league from the HBCU combine, I mean, from the HBCU platform, represented that number. Is very small. In fact, in 2017, and these are recent numbers, recent stats that, you know, in recent years leading up to 2020 up to the current. But just dating back to 2017, I'm quite sure if we go back even further, it probably will be a lot less. But sticking with 2017 and up, there were 31 players from the HBCU community that was in the NFL. In 2018, took a little dip. There were only 29 players from the HBCU platforms that were in the NFL. And last year, only up to 32 players from the HBCU platforms that were in the NFL. Now, with those facts in mind, out of the 32 players last year, there were 15 of them were offensive players, while the other 17 was on the defense side of the ball. Now, out of those 15 offensive players, 8 of those players were drafted. They're including tackle Titus Howard from Alabama State, who actually went in the first round to the Houston Texans at the 23rd overall. Now, Howard was the first HBCU player drafted in the first round since Dominic Rose-Cromartie from Tennessee State, when he was drafted by the Arizona Cardinals in the first round, 16th overall, in the 2008 NFL draft. So that, you know, so that was a long time since we had an HBCU player that was drafted in the first round. Now, on the defense side of the ball, out of those 17, like I said, Dominic Rose-Cromartie was drafted in 2018. But the other highest player that got drafted was Indianapolis Colts linebacker Darius Leonard from South Carolina State, who was drafted in the second round, 36th overall, in the 2018 NFL draft. So we really, when you look at players that came through the NFL, I mean, that came through the HBCU platform, there's not too many that actually had the opportunity to really, be drafted higher. Now, in terms of the regional combine platform, Demetrius Rainey, Tennessee State, I'm going to write a piece on this school. I'm really intrigued how this school is starting to become an NFL factory. But Rainey was the first HBCU player who came through the NFL regional combine platform to be drafted. He was drafted in the seventh round, 250th overall, by the Los Angeles Rams in 2014. Now, dating back to the regional combine workouts in 2014, there were only 12 schools that were represented out of the from the platform leading up to last year, 2019, and 16 of those players that came from those 12 schools actually signed to an NFL squad at some capacity. Now, along with Rainey, wide receiver Joel Davis, Bethune Cookman, and running back William Standback, Virginia Union, are the only HBCU, along with Rainey, were the only HBCU players that at least suited up during the preseason. So out of those 16 players, only three had an opportunity to play in the preseason, and currently from the NFL Regional Combine platform, in terms of HBCU players, Standback is the only player currently in the NFL who is now currently with the Las Vegas Raiders. So you see how this basically from the past several years, that the number of players from the HBCU program has been very, very minute. And when we come into this season, last year, altogether, out of those 32, there were 9 players that came through the process following the NFL draft in 2019. And when we look at those players, currently there are just 3 players from that mix that's still in the NFL. And those players are, like I talked about, Howard from Alabama State with the Houston Texans. He is one of them. Then we have, for the Baltimore Ravens, defensive back Terrell Barnes from Tennessee State, not surprised, who is currently with the Ravens. And the Cleveland Browns, punter Jamie Gillian from Arkansas Pine Bluff, who's with the Cleveland Browns. He's a punter, and yes, he is Caucasian. It's great to let you know that, hey, you know, our white brothers and sisters still can go to HBCU programs and still be successful and still, you know, in the right situation, still get into the NFL. And Jamie is one of those players. And he had a good rookie season with the Cleveland Browns. And I can see that he'll, you know, as far as the way how he is performing, being an extra component for the defense to help help opposing offenses go the distance. And when you have a punter that can have the ball hanging in the air for a very long time, that is a weapon it is definitely a weapon for the defense. But the defense got there and do their job and get a 3-and-out and get a short field for the offense, then he become viable for the offense as well. Now, last year, 9 players, 1 player drafted. 2020, this year, same outcome, 9 players, 1 player drafted. We're going to take a quick pause. We're going to come back. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about the players from this year's camp, who they signed with, and how this COVID-19 situation, this pandemic, could be a blessing in disguise for some of the players that were not going, that did not get an opportunity to go to the NFL this year. We'll talk about that when we come back from this short pause.
Imagine a league built by the people, for the people. A league dedicated to the economic development of your city. So the question becomes, how good are the 32 teams at play in the Minor Football League? Well, there's only one way to find out. You have to experience the NFL.
Welcome back to the Locker Talk on the home of the Bachelor News Radio Network. NFL starts tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of LockerDashReport.com. And you guys can always reach out to me any one of my social handles on Twitter at Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, or Locker Talk Podcast, and on Instagram, LockerReport100, all small caps. Or you guys can reach me out directly via email at BarryBarnes@Locker-Report.com. And make sure you guys always stay tuned on the Bachelor News Radio Network, where we have every topic, anything you can think of in regarding the world's news, anything as far as politics, religion, law, social matters, anything you can think of, this network has it. Now, with the Bachelor News Radio Network show, with the boss, L.A. Bachelor, you know, as he goes on there on Mondays and Thursdays, make sure you check him out between 6 and 8 Eastern time. So make sure you go check that. I'll check his show out as he covers a variety of topics that's concerning locally and nationally. And then the Down Some Files with Coco Koshny, fantastic group right there. Love working with those guys. I was on that show a week ago. So make sure you guys check them out on Tuesday and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then our new show, You and the Law Show, with Chief Keith Humphreys and Chief Virgil Green, as these guys talk about and also being open and honest on conversation with America about law enforcement and their relationship with the black and brown community. And then the Dr. Larry Show that you can always catch with Dr. Larry on Wednesdays from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, of course, yours truly on Fridays. And then the Pro Talk with Imani O that comes on right after me, Fridays at 9:30. So pretty much got everything covered when it comes down to news that reflects our community in this country. Now, right before we set this pause, we just talked about HBCU players and how they affect in the NFL, which has been very small. Over 1,600 players in the league, and you only average about 30 players from the HBCU platform that's been in the league since 2017. Now, last year there were 9 players from the HBCU program, process, that somehow, some way made it to the NFL. And this year equaled the same. Out of 9 players, 1 player was drafted. And I talked about R.A. Simmons from Tennessee State, how he was able to be drafted by the Chicago Bears in the 7th round, where he went there as their 227th overall pick. I think they got a steal right there. Now, as far as the players that signed as undrafted free agents, you hear me talk about this young man several times. His name is Chris Rowland. He signed with the Atlanta Falcons, Tennessee State. This young man is shifty, breakaway speed, great vision, good feet, good hands and awareness, outstanding in traffic, balance and control, dangerous out the backfield as a receiver, complete a slot and split out, and he's a solid return man as a return specialist. When we talk about with the Cleveland Browns, with the Alex Taylor, who was the only HBCU player that was invited to the scouting combine, he signed with the Cleveland Browns. When we go scroll down on the defense side of the ball, the Detroit Lions has signed Bobby Price from Norfolk State. I like this young man a lot. He's very intense, athletic, has good speed and hands, solid footwork, he's fearless, uses his size very well, decent cover skills, rarely surrenders the inside. You don't want to never give the inside to a speedy receiver, and that's something that he does a great job at, in not giving up the inside. He's patient yet aggressive, physical, and he does have a track and field background. Now, when we look at the Green Bay Packers, they signed the pair. Two guys actually went to the same school, so there's some familiarity there. But Jalen Morton from Prairie View A&M throws the deep ball well with accuracy, extends plays well from the pocket, has velocity on the ball, looks to pass first. He's only mobile when necessary, strong, commands the huddle, not the fastest, but he knows how to get to a spot, have decent touch, work the sideline very well, and he can be elusive. Now, with Morton, I basically talked about in my assessments of breaking him down that he needed to be on a squad where they had at least a veteran leadership, someone that he can learn from. Now, knowing Aaron Rodgers is probably not going to work too close with him, he really don't want to work with Jordan Hurts, who just got drafted in the first round. But we'll see how that play out. But I think Morton is in a good situation where he can learn, put some stuff on tape, and if he's blessed enough to make the practice squad, at least if he puts good enough stuff on tape, that some team will keep their eyes out for him, because I think that he can transition very well as a quarterback. Got the good size, good strength, and good stamina to do so. And his teammate in college, Jordan Jones, who is a slash fullback slash tight end, he's there as well. The Philadelphia Eagles kind of stayed close to local as they went to Morgan State and got Nassie Bailey, wide receiver. In his senior year with Morgan State as a Bear, he had 54 receptions for 996 yards and 10 touchdowns. He also has returned some punts as well. He also returned a punt for a score. And he played some linebacker before. Not saying that he's going to convert to a linebacker, but he played on the defense side of the ball. He has soft hands, very physical. Not surprised he used to be a linebacker. Protects the ball with his body very well. He's decent in traffic. Quick off the snap, a possession receiver, but he's better in the red zone situation, jump ball situation. Decent hand technique, balance, and he is a blocker. So you don't get too many receivers that want to come out there and block. Now, the New York Giants has been really active within the NFL Regional Combine platform, and they signed another young man coming that came through that was going to be at the HBCU Combine from Hampton, Kristen Angelo. Great feet, plays the ball well, keeps his eyes on the quarterback, shields his body very well, good feet, savvy, solid anticipation, rarely give up the inside, confident, does not gamble, the team guy, have good solid pad level, fundamentally sound, have good technique. So he's definitely someone who I think that will make his team for sure. The Tennessee Titans, they signed defensive tackle Kobe Smith from out of South Carolina State. He definitely have a good skill set to make this squad as well. So when we look at the breakdown from the players from the HBCU combine that would have gone there, you know, we have 7 out of the 9 players that would have been attending that, but was still able to get in the NFL. And like I said earlier in the show, it did not scratch the surface on the players that, unlike the players that came through that was going to attend the Regional Combine Invitational, where you had vast majority of those players signing to a team. But the HBCU Combine did not have a lot. Now, I'm not saying that every player from the Invitational regards of the Regional Combine made or signed with the team. I'm not saying that. Just a majority of them. But it was vice versa for the HBCU Combine. Now, with the COVID-19 situation, unfortunately, it affects millions of people in this country. Matter of fact, around the world, it affects a lot of people mentally, spiritually, emotionally, financially, and of course, physically, as in the tens of thousands people had lost their lives due to the pandemic. But there are things that put in place, local government and across the board, to at least try to sustain health, you know, for the citizens, particularly in the United States. Some people have been benefiting for it, unfortunately some people have not, you know, but that's not the whole issue here that I'm talking about. But there was some things that was put in place to help try to sustain life in itself. But when it turns to football, and when it turns to that draft year, that eligibility year, if a player did not make it to the league or sign with a team during that draft eligible year, it's really hard the following year to have those guys, you know, get in front of NFL scouts to make it into the NFL. Now, with the Alliance of American Football, the Spring League, and the XFL, for the past 2 years, we had some spring ball, which was something that players could gravitate to put on tape how they play on the field, to after their eligible year, draft year has passed, they still had an opportunity to still get to the NFL because they were playing, they had some stuff to put on tape to get recognized for the NFL. Now, both leagues had no affiliation with the NFL, but it did help some players. With the AAF, 17 of those players were able to sign with NFL clubs. Not all of them still in the league now. At the XFL, 14 players are currently signed with NFL teams. Now, both of those leagues have folded. Both of those leagues are not coming back. But before those leagues had, you know, had existed, NFL football operations had something they call a pro player combine. Pretty much a blueprint of what they had in 2015 was the veteran combine. Fortunately, I was at all these workouts. And the essence for the reason from the pro player combine was to pull back guys that actually were in the league, but for some reason fell out the league for at least a year. With the veteran combine, they was able to pull some players that was out of the league for a couple of years. But the pro player pretty much kept, I would say, pretty much like a two-year window, you know, at least 1 year removed, but still was playing football. So those guys would have received an invitation to come and work out as a pro player. Now, because of the two spring leagues, the AAF and the XFL had existed, the operations kind of suspended the pro player. Now, with both of those platforms gone, operations could have an opportunity to bring it back. Now, no one from the front office has talked about this. This is just me rambling, me as a writer, me as a evaluator, and someone who wants to make sure that young untapped talent still get a chance to get to the league. Now, with those two leagues out of the way, it would only make sense that the pro player would come back. Even if they just do it for 1 year, that'll be great, because there were some players from the regional combine, small school guys, that didn't get an opportunity or didn't get no shine to at least have an opportunity to sign with the team because they didn't have a workout. ACCU players, here we go. Most of those guys, all of them didn't have a workout, and most of those guys didn't receive a phone call. It would be great if some kind of combine workout for these players that missed out due to the pandemic, that missed out in working out for NFL teams. It would be great to have those guys to at least basically have an opportunity to work out next year, assuming everything is going to be stable, that these guys will have a chance. Now, the other 32 teams not necessarily worrying about the small school guys because their scouting combine still went on, and most likely it'll still go on next year. No one really thinking about the small schools, and definitely no one is not thinking about the HBCU schools. This is a topic that I will talk about in the coming week, so make sure you guys stay tuned. Next week, most likely, my wife, she's going to return. Like I said, I want her on at least once a month so she can put her spin on sports. She talks a lot. She got a lot to say. So make sure you guys tune in next week when Latia Barnes come back on the show. You guys can always reach out to me on any one of my social handles on Twitter at @Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, and Locker Talk Podcast, and on Instagram, LockerReport100, all small caps. Or also you shoot me an email at Barry Barnes at @BarryBarnes@Locker-Report.com. Hope everyone stays safe. Everyone continue to watch all kinds of sports, even repeat, and make sure you keep looking at The Last Dance. I can't wait. Definitely going to get into that and see what Mike and those guys, how they ended this series. Everyone stay blessed. Be safe out there. Talk to you next week.
Welcome back to the show. Thanks to all of our guests. This is the Bachelor News Radio Show. I'm L.A. Bachelor alongside my good friend, award-winning editor and journalist himself. In my book, Tony T. Mac McLean, will get hit to him in just a bit. I want to bring in my next guest. He is the athletic director at Florida Memorial University Athletics. And of course, there. Sideline like everybody else in terms of athletics, in terms of universities in itself. He's Ernest T. Jones. And Mr. Jones, I appreciate your patience. Thanks for coming on. I hope all is well with your family. And I hope, especially in a state like Florida, where the curve hasn't really hit at this point.
Yes, sir. L.A., I definitely appreciate the opportunity to come and speak with you, represent Florida Memorial University and our community here. All is well with me and my family. We're blessed. Knocking on wood, nothing has happened with anyone in my family, any of my friends. Just no one close to me has been impacted by COVID, but obviously our nation is being impacted, so our prayers are with our nation.
Absolutely. How is it affected you in a state? I'm in North Carolina. Not as bad, thank God, but certainly they're talking about could get worse, and we've seen some signs, and not as bad as where our previous guests in New York and Connecticut, but certainly Florida has been a spot where there's been some controversy about reopening, let alone the social distancing. So from the athletic department, from the school department, what has it been like? What are some of the plans that you've had to put in place because there is no life on campus right now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, having to be able to take all our course offerings online. But believe it or not, we did not use an online platform before COVID hit. So to be able to, we actually got it in place in 3 days. It took the university 3 days to get the computers in, get the professors and administration trained, and et cetera, et cetera. But 3 days after it hit, we were online as a university. That was the biggest challenge that we had. And it's been pretty good since that point. The second challenge was we deal with a lot of internationals, you know, especially in athletics. But our university, I would say about 40% of our population are internationals, and trying to get those kids back home, or in the beginning, if they went home, trying to get them back here to the university. So that was a challenge for us as well. But on the athletic side, just ending competition. You know, we were, you know, our baseball team was in the thick of it in the conference. Our beach volleyball team, first ever HBCU beach volleyball here in South Florida, was in the thick of that conference. And our track team was off to a great start. And in athletics, you know, so abruptly that impacted us. And that was something we had to deal with.
I'm interested to know, not to be critical, but just if you can answer why you guys, because you're international, right? So some cases one would think, and you're there, I'm not, you're in involved with the university, that you would not have that online schooling, if you will, prior to a pandemic. In other words, if you have 40% of your people coming from internationally connected, that maybe you want to have that in place, and thank God for you guys, and good for you guys, it took 3 days just to get it in place, but why not have it in place prior to that anyway?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question, and what I would say is, you know, we're new. You know, I'm 1 year here at Florida Memorial University. That is my president. My president came 13 years at Baylor, 11 years at FIU, progressive, aggressive type men, and a bunch of the new people who are here since our president has arrived come from places with better technology and more modern. It's just that the people of the past, it was just something that they did not have. And since this new administration has come, we have been here to elevate the university to get to a level that will be competitive with other institutions of our caliber. So it was just, we were a little bit behind times. It was something that we wanted to do, been trying to do, and that's why we was able to get together in 3 days, because we had already been trying to move to that. But this made it happen a lot quicker.
Well, and let me just say, on the record, off the record, whatever the record is, that I'm very impressed and pleased with your staff. And I'm not just saying just your staff, you know, with your SID and Wilcox and Siobhan does a great job. But just the entire administration is built with people of color, black women, and it's refreshing, I'll just say, just as a side note, to see that within an HBCU to actually reflect those that look like us. So that's a good thing. And I'll just leave it at that. I mean, you don't have to comment on that, but I just it's a good thing for you guys. Talk about the challenges, though. If you're so you're new to it and you know, obviously FMU, you know, we're not talking about Florida State and, you know, in the regard of the bigger and, you know, playing in a Power Five and that kind of stuff athletically. But talk about the challenges with this COVID, both financially and endowment. You have to still be able to raise money because you got to keep the doors open. So you want to be safe and follow the guidelines, and everybody want to come home safe to their families. But once things open up, things have to be opened up. So I know if the PWIs are struggling with the challenges of what we're going to do and when we're going to do it, imagine FMU. So talk about those challenges moving forward.
Absolutely. And I definitely would not tell you that we don't have challenges, but I would tell you that the success of any institution, university, or organization is people. And we have great people here at Florida Memorial University. And the relationships that we have and the things that we've built in the year that we've been here has helped us to be able to deal with COVID. I mean, we came in here, as I said, we bought beach volleyball here, first year ever playing beach volleyball, first year volleyball coach, you won a conference championship. We're doing some good things here in this community. And all of the things that we do are to give back to this community, provide employment, provide opportunity to be educated, provide opportunities for them to come here and go to school, get a job, play sports. So people in our community are very receptive to us. You know, what we've been doing through COVID is we've been acknowledging community businesses. We've been trying to find ways to support community businesses. We've been giving back. So instead of us going out ask, we've been trying to get on the other side of it and give. And in turn, people have decided to support us in other ways. So we haven't lost many of the supporters that we've had, in particular on the athletic side, who support us with donations and helping us with some fundraising initiatives and things like that. So there is a struggle. The struggle is enrollment, trying to keep enrollment up and getting these young people to want to come back to these campuses to go to school here. But in regards to revenue and get support of our community, we are still continuing to have some success.
If you're just joining us here on the Bassett News Radio Show, we're talking with Ernest T. Jones. Of course, he is the athletic director at Florida Memorial University. In a place I'm very familiar with, used to live in Port St. Lucie, used to make that trip down that way a lot, Mr. Jones, so I'm familiar with it. But if you're just joining us, hit us up at 646-929-0130 or press follow us and ask questions at Pad Nation on Facebook or Pad Nation 2, the number 2, at Twitter. Before I go to my colleague, Tony T-Mac McClain, Mr. Jones, when you decided as a school to bring in women's flag football, and there's a couple of ways to address that. First, I'm so happy that women, another sport for women, is being acknowledged and being sanctioned as a varsity sport. So it's legit. So it's not just some, you know, some varsity thing that, you know, some women get together and they play in their spare time. It's a varsity sport. The Ledger beginning next year. So talk about that. Talk about the NFL. I know Troy Vincent is involved with the player development, and they're on the board, and they're excited and trying to help. And it comes through the NAIA. But talk about that. Why now? Bringing in this sport and why and how the challenges will be to make sure that you're ready. And I guess you got nothing but time on your hands getting ready for the 2021 season.
Absolutely. First of all, let me just say that we are for supporting our women, in particular in leadership positions. Our provost here at Florida Memorial University, Dr. Adrienne Cooper, is a female. My deputy athletic director, number two person in charge in athletics, Mrs. Siobhan Mansfield, is a female. So we support our women leaders, first and foremost. But secondly, we have 12 sport offerings here at Florida Memorial University, with seven of those sport offerings being female sports. So we understand the importance of our women being successful in education and on the athletic surfaces. But in regards to bringing women's flag football, we term it a new day here at Florida Memorial University. It truly is a new day, and we want to be out front. We're the first HBCU in the country to play beach volleyball. In fact, we're the only HBCU in the country who plays, and we are the only HBCU in the country that will be playing women's flag football. We had a number of events here for the Super Bowl. We hosted the Super Bowl. We were one of the hosts for the Super Bowl this year. Troy Benson was here on our campus, and we partnered on some events and kind of got a little bit of insight about this being something that was coming. So to be able to partner with the NFL, RCF, which is the reigning champ experience, and the NAIA, to be on the front line of bringing women's flag football to South Florida, why would we not? We have so much interest. My email box is overloaded with student athletes who want to come. I'll probably get two or three coaches who want to come here and coach. Like, it's going to be exciting. We're going to be not just playing women's flag football. We plan to try to host the national championship here in South Florida, and we want to be playing in the national championship in year one.
Wow. So, I mean, and it's no shame in the fact that this is a good recruiting tool to bring in the best of the best, the brightest in women. I mean, really,
oh,
you know, this
oh
is a great tool. It's got to be.
Oh, are you kidding me? What an attraction. I had two young women who called it today who were going to be leaving the state. So they weren't just going to be leaving South Florida. They were going to go leave the state. And they were calling, asking about enrolling in Florida Memorial so that they can come here and play sports. One was an engineer, and one wanted to be in aviation. Two great programs that we highlight here on our campus. So we have them. We got them in place to fill out some applications. But we researched it. There are over 7,000 high school girls, females, playing flag football in the state of Florida. And we say that 10% of them came to Florida Memorial University. What a difference we make here on our campus. So we feel pretty good about what's going to happen with women's flag football here on our campus and in South Florida.
And you want to graduate people, but you want the brightest minds, certainly, and you certainly want to be able to bring in that kind of talent. Talking with Ernest T. Jones, of course, he used to have athletic director at Florida Memorial University in South Florida, 646-929-0130, the number to get in touch with us. If you aren't on the line, you'll lose the live feed at the top of the hour, wherever time zone you're listening to right now or whatever country, because we have people globally listening. With that, I want to turn over the questions to my good friend and longtime friend and colleague, Tony T. Mac McLean. Good evening, sir. Hope all is well.
Hey, guys. How are you? Mr. Jones,
hey, Tony.
Just to follow up on that, we all know how big football in general is down in Florida. Did that have everything to do with putting together the women's program? And what are just some of, and also with that being said, what are some of the things that you guys have to do to lead up to next year?
Absolutely. It most certainly played a part in it, Tony. I don't know if you know, but we are going to be playing football at Florida Memorial University this fall. First time in 61 years. So upon my hire, I was able to present to the administration and our board of trustees that we wanted to play football. So we are already bringing football on, and we spent the whole year preparing to bring football on. So to bring women's flag football, we had already began that process when we were bringing football on. So it made it a little bit easier. And then from a finance standpoint, the equipment that we'll need and the travel that we'll have to do to play the games was a lot less than it's going to be to play football. So we thought it was a win-win. We think that we're going to get plenty of women that's going to want to come play the sport, and we think that we're going to be able to handle the cost to get the equipment, pay the coach, and travel to the contest.
Now, you know, LA was saying earlier, you know, everybody is pretty much, you know, in a whole pattern. What is, you know, without you know, divulging too much, what would be sort of, I guess, for lack of a better word, what would be sort of the drop dead date in case you guys are not able to have, you know, intercollegiate sports this for at least the 2021 semester?
All right. Well, let me, you know, we'll speak. I believe in transparency and candidacy. I'm actually, you know, I am a sitting AD, and I sit in meetings at least twice a week with other ADs around our nation. And obviously, I'm reading the newspaper and the news yesterday. I don't believe that we will not play sports. Sports will happen. Sports mean too much to our world, to our economy, to these young people, to families, fans, parents, et cetera. There will be a health and safety part of it. There's no way we'll play without putting health and safety in the forefront, but I don't foresee us not playing athletics in 2021. So to speak on what if it didn't happen, I don't know how to think like that because I don't see that happening, but I most certainly believe we'll be playing sports in the fall, no question.
And one last one, besides the athletics, what are some of the things the school on a whole is trying to do, you know, academically? Like you said, you know, everything literally is on hold. There's all sorts of contingency plans, but what are some of the things that in working with the administration that you're doing that's going to be done for the school that sort of goes hand in hand with what athletics are doing?
Absolutely. We chase academic excellence here at Florida Memorial University. So don't get me wrong, academics is first and foremost, and we average better than a 3.0 GPA on the athletic side. But some of our course offerings are some of the best in the nation, not just in the state of Florida and South Florida. I mean, we have an aviation school here. We actually have an airport that sits next to our campus where our students can go over to train on flying real live airplanes, et cetera, et cetera. One of the other things we do is to produce more teachers and principals in the state of Florida, not just in South Florida, than any of the institutions in this state. We have a lot of academic offerings that's top of the line. So we want to be known for our academics first and foremost. Athletics is trying to chase the university to meet that academic standard that they have. But we want people to know that they can get a degree from here, that they don't have to leave South Florida, they don't have to leave this state, they don't have to go up north, they don't have to go out west or east or anywhere. They can stay right here and get a degree that will work for them. They can make as much money in the career field that they want to be in. Like, that's what we want to be known for. And we give a lot back to our community. We do a lot of things in this community here in Miami Gardens. So that's what we want to be known for, chasing academic excellence, position to go get the job and be in the career that you want to be in. And then if by chance you want to play athletics, you can come and do that as well.
All right. Thank you. We're talking with Ernest T. Jones, of course, athletic director at Florida Memorial University here, FMU, on the show. Orlando Hughes in Philly, do you have questions for our guest, sir?
I do not. I just welcome him, and I'm interested in what he's talking about. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Orlando. Appreciate it.
Ernest, when you look at – Tony touched on, you know, the – way of life, it seems, in when it comes to football in Florida. I mean, you can look at Texas and you can look at Florida as the two states that you stand out, where it's, you know, high school all through, you know, the pro level. in those states that football is just a part of everybody's lives for the most part. Florida being more warm, so a lot more things to do. But having said that, are you concerned, two-part, are you concerned with, maybe concern wouldn't be the word for the NFL, but would you hope that the NFL has a wherewithal to be a partner in flag football, number one, staying the course with this? We've had concerns on this show about the NFL when it comes to HBCUs in general. But that's another topic for another day. And then the second part of it is, you not only have the Power Fives, the Florida States, the U, you know, but you have Florida International. You have UCF and all these different programs that some are bigger, some are smaller, but they're certainly not, you know, again, the Florida State, Florida Gators or the U. Are you concerned in terms of recruiting, not just the best of the best academically, but certainly recruiting athletically? And you know, it doesn't go without said that you are starting this football program in addition to this flag women's football at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, in regards to the NFL, I think that we definitely want them to give their support to us. Miami Dolphins, we're in Miami Gardens. Their stadium is across the street from our stadium. In fact, their overflow parking is in our parking lot. So we would think and hope that they will partner with us and try to help support this so that we can be successful, because our success leads to their success, leads to this community's success. So we do need the help of the NFL partners, in particular our Miami Dolphins, and I can see that happening. The second part of it is, I think that the recruitment will be great for them. It already is. I mean, you have an athletic director working here who worked at Notre Dame, Cincinnati, UConn, Buffalo, et cetera, et cetera. You have a senior associate athletic director that worked at UCF, worked at Northern Colorado, et cetera, et cetera. You have the most decorated high school coach ever out of South Florida in Tim Harris here on his campus leading that team, along with the staff that he's putting together. We are HBCU, LA, but we play in Tony, but we play in a PWI conference. So we get the best of both worlds. We get to be on that side, on the PWI side, but we still are an HBCU. We still get to go play HBCU contests versus some of our HBCU counterparts out there. So it's a good thing for us, and that's the difference between us and FIU and South Florida and Central Florida and FAU. They can't say that they are a part of both worlds. And then if you want to stay here in South Florida, where it's known statistically the best athletes are in South Florida, the next experience like that is 8 hours to 6 hours up the road. So why go 6 to 8 hours up the road when you can stay right here and get everything out of you want from an educational standpoint and from an academic standpoint, where you're led by somebody else in the business from an administration and from a coach? And as well, LA, are the best facilities in our conference. We're in a PWI conference, but no one has better facilities than we have top to bottom. Our football team and our soccer teams play on the best surface in one of the best surfaces in the country. Our men's and women's basketball team and our volleyball team play on the best surface in our conference. Our baseball team plays on the best surface in our conference. So we have a lot to offer. When people come to our campus, they are like, oh, my God, I didn't know it looked like this. Or it most certainly does. So we're not concerned about being able to attract high-level recruits here.
I tell you, boy, if they don't have a better, better spokesperson than yourself, I mean, you sound like you could run for president at this point, and Lord knows we need somebody else, but that's a whole different story. But listen, I appreciate you, yes sir, and I appreciate you coming on. Best of luck, not just with women's flag football. I think at a time where, you know, women's sports is being attacked, women in general being attacked, I think this is a really good thing for your university, but certainly for women's sport. And we need to stay connected. Let's stay in touch. Best of luck to you and what you do and your staff. and the university, your family personally. God bless, be well, and we will definitely put you in the loop, if that's okay with you, to get you guys on the air, not just you, but also your coaches.
Oh, I would appreciate it, Stella. Thank you for having us. We don't take this lightly or for granted. God bless you and your family as well, and we look forward to talking to you in the near future.
Absolutely. Thank you.